Hello, folks. Welcome back to another episode of Lay Film Podcast. I am one of your new recent co-hosts, Jezzer, and joining me on today's episodes is Kevin and Pat.
Yes, I'm also here.
Yes, I am Kevin.
And I'm Pat.
And today, well, we just got out of the theater to watch the end of Evangelion once again. I know we've been talking about this for a little while, doing like a run through of all the Evangelions, including the rebuilds and everything. Mm-hmm. It's a long time coming. It's been like over a year since we last watched the last Eva, the rebuilds in theaters. Mm-hmm. So this is overdue. It's good timing that it came back to theaters. I don't know how to kick this off usually, but I'll just be open forum. How'd you guys feel watching it again in the theater for like the 19th time or however, you know?
Yeah, I've seen it so much, the film's like faster, like it feels like a 40-minute film at this point, but I know it's not. It's like, yeah, what, 2 hours?
It's really fast now. Yeah. To us. Yes. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was a special feeling. Thank you guys for coming, thank you for taking me, and yeah, I it is really different to see it on the big screen. I didn't expect it to be like that. Like, you know, there's some magic happening there. I want to say I was floored. Just, I've seen these stills a billion times, but something about it hit extra hard.
I feel the same exact way. Every time that I watch this movie, it feels like I'm watching it again for the very first time, but in a very different way. Like you guys, I was like focusing on something entirely different. Like, it was just washing over me this entire, because we sat pretty up front. Oh, yeah. It felt like watching it in IMAX.
Yeah.
And like the entire screen is just filled with this insanely gripping and like hypnotic imagery. Like, I felt like I was in a trance while watching it. And I was like thinking back to the final Evangelion movie, and I feel very torn about which one I feel is like the definitive ending for me, if there even is a definitive ending.
Yeah.
Or a fitting end to the series. But, like, something about this one, watching it this time around, just seemed even more amplified than any other time that I've seen it before.
It's different each time, I feel like. I feel like it depends on my mood, mm-hmm. where you're at in life, what's on your mind before going into the movie. This time, I don't think I was in my feelings as much. I think I watched it, and I was still, like, in horror and shock at some stuff, but I don't know. I felt, I think partly because I know how the rebuild ends, and I know that it's just the happier scenario there, kind of, that I watch this now and I'm like, okay, that's nice, but it doesn't like hurt me as much anymore. Or I don't know what it is. Maybe because I'm older too now. It's still sad, obviously, some parts. I think a lot of the scenes resonate with me a little bit better now that I'm older, too. Like, a lot of the stuff that they're trying to encourage Shinji with, a lot of those lines, I think those resonate better with me. But yeah, that was a trip. And I like how close we were to the theater screen. Like, I could, like, look up and see, like, Godzilla or something. Oh, and then funny story. So, like, this dude who sat next to me, he brought his girlfriend. Oh, yeah. After the movie was over, he went up to say hi to his buddy. And me, Pat, and Kevin were walking in a theater. I walked past them, and then both of these guys were like, yeah, she didn't get it. Oh, she didn't get it. Like, I'm like, damn, dude, this dude brought his girl to watch End of Evangelion, and she didn't like it. That's fucking crazy. Yeah. Then I think about, like, I didn't really get it the first time I watched it either, which makes me want to know where everyone was in the 90s when they first watched this, and makes me want to know, how did you guys feel watching it the first time through? what went through your mind, and what is your understanding of it now?
I want to say there's no getting it. You can never get Ava. You just experience it at different moments in life. And, you know, there's a through line for different people. Like, this viewing again, I was all Asuka. Anytime she says something, like, about her irrational insecurities or her trauma stuff, I'm like, it just hits home. I'm like, that's, you know, that's me on the screen, but as a 14-year-old Japanese girl with red hair. Not an almost 30-year-old man in America with red hair. But it just hits, like, that connection is still, like, that was my first viewing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, back in high school, I was, like, a senior going into college, and I had watched, like, 2.22 on Toonami.
Oh, yeah.
And I had seen Evangelion stuff through, like, cultural osmosis, but it was just, like, impenetrable. Like, my brain can comprehend that there's a TV series from the 90s with a movie, with the OVA, Death and Rebirth, with these rebuild trilogies. Like, I wasn't smart enough back then, so I just watched... I think I watched the first rebuilds, and then I went back to the anime. Yeah, I watched 1.11 and 2.22.
Oh, wow.
And then I was like, I don't fully understand any of this. And then
yeah,
I started watching the series, and then, yeah, I was, like, driving up to see my brother in college, just blasting the End of Eva soundtrack.
The first time that I watched this movie, it was the same thing where... I discovered this show through, like, friends. Pat, of course, like, really got me into it.
Forcing on everyone.
Yeah. But I remember even in, like, high school, I had friends, like, who would... I would just remember them talking about this series before. And I always thought about, like, hey, yeah, it'd be cool to, like, watch that. But I haven't the first clue of where to even find this thing. Mm-hmm. But then when I really, like, started paying attention to it was, I want to say back in, like, 2018 or something, I started watching the series, and I think I gave up around, like, episode 8, maybe, episode 9. But then after an extended period of time, I rewatched it again, and then something about it just, like, clicked with me. And then... Oh. I remember the first time I watched this movie, I think it was at your house, Pat. I think that we watched it together at your place.
Maybe. Yes.
And, and, like, I just remember sitting in, like, the armchair or something like that.
Yeah.
And watching the first set of credits go by. And I was devastated.
Yes. I've watched End of Eva with, I think, 4 different people for the first time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Shit. Yeah, I think when I first watched it with you guys, I was like, when at the end, the very end, I was like, that's it? I was so confused. And I think Pat had to explain it, like, well, like, Shinji, like, fucking inadvertently kind of saves himself and almost humanity by, like, what, realizing the secret to life or whatever the fuck.
He just gives people the choice.
Yeah.
Except for his mom, who's trapped in an eternal monument to humanity.
Right.
Which is really... That's... When we watched with Kaylee for the first time, my ignorant masculine brain didn't comprehend all the feminist angles to this. Like, what, Kaylee really spelled it out for us.
Yeah, like the vagina opening up on the
fucking
head.
Well, I recognize that, but I thought it was just like, oh, it's kind of like skeevy, yeah. Referencing Freudian psychology.
Oh, yeah.
You know, his obsession with his mother, the mother's absence.
That's very true. Yeah, I really didn't get it at first, and you have to explain it, and I watched it more, and I get a little bit more of it now. I still personally think that I like the ending where everyone's like, congratulations, congratulations.
Yeah, the first ending.
I think that one's much better, but this one's cool too. I really like the stream of consciousness stuff now. I really like when Shinji's just fucking yelling at Asuka to, like, help me, save me, and she's like, no, fucking fend for yourself for once or whatever. And I like how when all those images start coming, like, just back to back flashing at you, like that image of the cat. Mm-hmm. There's like a drawing of a cat, and then there's like an actual real life video footage of a cat. This thing is such a weird spectacle, and I don't even know, like, how much, like, in-depth knowledge and insight I can give, because even though it's, like, my fifth time seeing it, I'm still very much, like, flabbergasted, I guess. But I guess I enjoy, like, Shinji trying to learn, trying to grow, and then that's what kind of ends up saving himself. It's, like, him piecing himself back together and being like, well, maybe I do want to be with, you know, maybe I do want to live life. Maybe I do want to get in the robot. Mm-hmm. You know, shit like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was, I'm also in the same camp where I feel, or I personally don't think I will ever understand this, ever. Like, the series, period, but at the same time, I feel like I get it on an intuitive level. Where everything is just, like, a metaphor inside of this series for something in your own life. Like, there's so many different, like, archetypes that you could just, like, fill in different people who you've come across in life or who have had, like, a significant impact on you. Whether it's in, like, the role of, like, a Masato person who, like, is constantly watching out for you or something like that. Or, somebody who's, like, urging you to, like, reach your full potential. And, like, there was this one scene where, that I hadn't paid attention to. At least, I hadn't seen the sub version before, so, and I also don't remember it. But it's the scene where Asuka is coming out of her coma, at the bottom of the lake, inside of, Ava Unit 2. And it's just holding on her upside down when she's saying, I don't want to die, don't want to die, don't want to die. Mm. And, like,
and then her mother talking to her through the AT, that's
like
cool.
Yeah, like, slowly coming
in. I never noticed that before in the dub version, that another voice was talking to Asuka.
I didn't either.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to say, because my ears aren't completely attuned to it, but I want to say it's at least her mother and maybe Masato or another. Oh. But yeah, it's obviously maternal figures. And that's, like, the little like, build-up to, like, the hand reaching across from the collective unconscious souls.
That's crazy.
And then Asuka, yeah, she awakens, and she's like, oh, I understand now. And it's, like, a horror movie where there's, like, a big Godzilla monster staring down the human military. And it's like, yes, it's right. Kill them. Kill the soldiers, please. But, yeah, she's seen beyond the veil.
Yeah.
To what Shinji experiences later on and we experience with him in the everyone's melded together.
Right.
But yeah, it breaks Asuka as well, where she's just like in full kill mode. I can't lose.
I still get really grossed out when she dies to the S2 equipped Avas or whatever, Ava series. Those guys will forever fucking haunt me.
Yeah.
Something about how Anno drew them or whoever the fuck drew them. It's disgusting. They're disgusting to me. I think it's because they're part bird, and they've got those weird Joker lips with the smile.
Yeah, like the... It's like a homunculus?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those little statues where it's all the senses.
It's fucking gross to me. Like, those guys will haunt me. If I ever do, like, some kind of weird horror movie in my life, I'll, like, homage those things somehow. Like, fuck those guys, dude.
Just no eyes.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And then just the claw teeth and whatnot.
Yeah, and then them, like, just picking at Asuka's corpse, like... fucking
with their like
yeah like birds. Oh god,
yeah, it's like a pack of vultures.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was that was deeply horrifying watching that on the big screen.
Oh yeah,
with the sound system too and the music. Oh, the music hits so much better than I ever remembered watching it in theaters.
Yeah, man. Oh, and then yeah, when she gets pierced in the eye with the spear, yeah, I always like get hurt inside when she screams. Even the Japanese version, which I haven't watched in a while, I don't think. Still, that scream is also still very good. I'm like, oh, gosh.
And then when her hand splits open and...
Sheesh. Oh, something I caught this time was... Okay, I thought that Shinji, like, purposely chose not to, like, come to Asuka's rescue, but I didn't realize that the fucking Ava was flooded with red shit.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, yeah, it's completely flooded. So, like, oh, you can't get in.
So he couldn't, like, even if he wanted to. Yeah, and then only, like, for some reason when his mom wakes up in the Ava is when she, like, breaks out of the ooh or the... whatever, the goo. Yeah.
I like it's the through line of the whole movie. Again, back to the, like, the male protagonist, he does nothing. The whole first, before the first credits roll,
yeah,
he's, like, dragged around everywhere by different women.
Yeah.
And even as the Ava Unit 1, he's like, oh, Asuka's being devoured alive. And he's like, oh, can't do anything. And then, like, his mom's soul inhabiting the giant robot is like, shut the, like, get in. It breaks free on its own and just puts the hand, like, almost crushing him, but it's, like, right there.
Legit, yeah. But I feel like we've all been there. I feel like we've all been there where you don't want to do anything in, with your life. You do just want to sit there and curl up into a ball and die, or you just don't feel like getting in the robot. You don't feel like doing anything. And, like, yeah, that first half of the movie, as I get older, the more I watch that scene, or that first half of the movie, I'm like, yeah, I get it, Shinji. Like,
yeah.
Holy shit. And it makes me think about, like, what mental state Anna might have been in to have made this shit again, right? Like, obviously, the rebuild is a different story, but when you go back to the 90s stuff, it's like, man, what was up with Hideaki Anno? Like, was he okay? I don't know.
I think the documentaries confirm no.
Yeah.
He was definitely not okay.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
No, the classic. He was the, I want to say he said it somewhere, but he expelled all these emotions through the creation of Evangelion, or End of Eva.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, yeah, I was at my lowest, so I just put it into the Eva. So, like, yeah, I can only assume we're getting a fraction of the feeling.
Yeah.
And it's overwhelming for me.
If it drove you to create an animated feature.
Yeah.
Oh,
God. Now that you mentioned the documentary stuff, I remember that, like, he had, like, a tough relationship with his father. Like, his father, his real-life father had, like, been injured in,
yeah.
It was cutting a tree or something?
Industrial.
Or industrial incident, right?
He had lost his leg.
Yeah. And then, so he had, like, a strained relationship with his father. And it makes you think, like, how, yeah, just how bad it must have been to have, like, mirrored his characters like that. Like, Shinji and his father and their whole relationship. Like, for him to have poured out everything like that onto that, I don't know. That's insane to me.
Yeah. Mm. He's both his dad and Shinji. And all the other characters in Slight. That's what I love the most still about every time I watch this. It's always like, oh, I relate to this part of Ritsuko. I relate to this part of Rei. I relate to Shinji. Like, yeah, there's a lot of times I feel paralyzed by choice or the need to do something. So, yeah, it's like, it's fresh to see it communicated so well in film. Like, I think Bo's Afraid is another one to really hit that energy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like, just your parental trauma, I guess.
Yeah, and you're like a passenger in your own life.
Yeah.
I know I definitely have struggled with disassociation and I think it's called derealization as well as depersonalization.
Derealization? I never heard of that. What is that?
Where you view everything as like an object,
oh,
I think.
Oh, shit.
Including yourself. Like, you don't feel like you are inside of your body.
Okay.
I definitely relate a lot with that in the past, and I think that that's why the series resonated with me so much, is it displayed so many fears that I didn't know how to picture in my own head, and then seeing it on screen, something about it just spoke to me, and I feel like it, in a way, it's given me a lot of lessons to think on, especially with all the just the very traumatic journeys, as well as being able to overcome them in some way, or at least, as Masato says, like, live standing on your feet, and then you know, before you die.
Mm-hmm.
Like what you said, Jezzer, a lot of the lines inside this movie, I found myself having a newfound appreciation for.
Yeah.
And because I remember I used to have, like, this issue in the past where whenever somebody compliments me, I don't know how to, like, accept it. Or I don't know, because I don't feel like I'm worth the kindness or something like that.
Right, right.
And it's like what Shinji's going through the entire series. Like, he can't accept people being so warm to him. Because, mm-hmm. like, the elevator scene, where he's saying how he feels like he'll just end up doing more damage than yeah. if he hadn't done anything at yeah. all.
And he even yells about, like, how much he thinks they're liars or, like, how disingenuous they are in some scenes yeah. and everything, too. And I get that, like, yeah, I hear what you're saying. Like, I feel that way, too, sometimes when people are, maybe they compliment me or trying to genuinely be nice and reach out or something. If it's somebody I really don't know or don't trust all that well, I'm very much like a, well, hold up, what the fuck are you talking about? Who are you? Yeah. What are you talking about?
What do you want from me?
Yeah, yeah. So I totally get it. And yeah, and all those scenes where he's just like completely lashing out and especially during like the third impact scenes where it's just streams of consciousness or like distorted reality. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's just Anno laying it all on, like all of his frustrations of his life on paper or something. Like, yeah, I don't know if I'm sure he wrote all the lines himself or if he had worked with somebody else. I don't know. But, like, obviously he was just, like, straight up, like, bleeding heart that shit all over the script. And that really resonates. I think that's also super... That's, like, the interesting part about Evangelion. It's just, for me, trying to decide or think about, like, well, what life did this guy live in order for him to have made something like this? I'm very curious. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I don't know what else. I mean, I'm trying to think, what haven't I said already about Evangelion? Especially when I think about, it's like my, like I said, fifth or sixth time watching it, and my feelings are, you know, my feelings are different. The hype train has left. I still enjoy it and everything, but I'm trying to think now, like, what hasn't already been said about it that, you know, I haven't mentioned before or anything. I don't know.
I have a good one.
Uh-huh.
How'd you guys feel about the iconic theater shot? Oh. It felt different for me this time because mm-hmm. we were in a theater.
Yeah.
That one was different. Hold on. Was the original intent for that to... I feel like I heard somewhere that, like, it was also, like, some meta commentary on the audience who had watched Ava at the time.
Yeah, it was, like, the pre-screening filmed where, like, they were, you know, like... Here's the first screening for yeah. this audience, and then the directors are there and the writers. And okay. They're like, oh, you know, here's the finished product. I guess they filmed that, I want to say, for the audience's reaction, and they included that in the later edit for, like, mass theaters.
Yeah. But was it because, like, he had gotten death threats, hadn't he, for, yeah. like, not finishing Ava?
Oh, yeah. Like, he was very upset with the fan base.
Yeah.
That's why there's that short film he made as a trailer for the end of Eva with the voice actresses for Rei, Asuka, and Misato.
Uh-huh.
It's about them living... It's like Love and Pop-esque where it's about these three women living their very human lives. And it's, you know, I interpret it as like it's a demystification of... these characters these fans have become rabidly obsessed with and are, like, shipping themselves with. Or, like, oh, like, you know, I'm an Asuka fan.
Yeah.
Or Rei sucks. Asuka's great. He puts them in a human perspective.
Okay.
It's like them, like, going on dates with boys and, you know, developing into the women. Or, like, just someone, like, using the bathroom. Just like the
someone using the bathroom.
Well, not like, but like, you know, like you wake up at 1 a.m. You're not wearing makeup. You're not this idealized, like, present.
Okay. So, like, a deconstruction of
the whole
idolized females.
Yeah. Because when they hear the voice of these real people, they think of the characters that aren't real at all. And he really just shows them, like, no, here they are at 1 a.m.
Oh, okay.
No makeup on, going poop. Like, these are real people. Stop. Like, stop being obsessive, gross. Like, does it feel good to escape your reality into this, you know, which he's doing it. He's creating the reality to escape his own and share it with others. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, I find that to be admirable. But that's my interpretation of that whole movie theater scene where it's like it's a big finger pointed directly at the audience saying, like, yes. You're watching this. Be sure you're taking away the right stuff.
Thing. Yeah.
Don't just sit there and obsess about how cute Rei is, or you're gonna, you know, whatever. You think about the traumas and the stories that I'm telling, not just I like the one with the blue hair or the red hair.
True. Yeah, this time around, yeah, that scene was different because it's like when it shows like those empty theater seats, I'm like, oh, I'm there. I'm imagining myself in it. Yeah, so that one did hit differently for sure. I was also trying to think about the sandbox scene again, because I don't think I ever gave it that much thought before. This time I'm like, okay, what is this? Is it a mirror or is it analog to Anno building Evangelion and him like having to tear it down and cry about it and build it back up again for himself or for other people? Or was it analogous to Shinji in general having to live his life, wanting to destroy his life and trying to live it again? I don't know. What do you guys think?
See, my interpretation is always because of the geofront, I think it is.
That's what I thought, because it's a pyramid.
Yeah, so they're building that little pyramid in a playground.
Mm-hmm.
And the interpretation for me is it can be anything. Either it could be about Anno with the series, it could be about Shinji as a representation of all of humanity, building these structures as testaments to their existence, and then they're destroyed by time.
Yeah.
As well as, you know, he's the one kid not being picked up by his parents, specifically his mother. And then the weird, like you mentioned with the non-derealization, like the other kids are dolls he's interacting with, they're not other people. I don't know if the direct answer, but that's my interpretation
That sounds damn good.
I like that. That makes a whole lot of sense.
Especially with all the lights just being lights and not the sun or anything like that.
Oh, that too. I realized that wasn't the sun this time. I thought they were. Like, it was just like fucking studio lights or something.
Yeah.
Well, I think part of the reason why I got that, or I thought of this that scene differently now, was there's a similar thing in the rebuild too, where he's saying goodbye to Evangelion, and it's like a fucking like studio scene with all the Evangelions.
Where they do the 3D like motion capture for the robots.
So I felt like once I saw that this time around, I'm like, oh wait a minute, that's not the fucking sun at all. And I'm like, oh okay, this is probably a meta for him and production of Evangelion, maybe to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I liked how big the screen was this time, because being the theater, I got to see the grain and all those shots. They were cool. Yeah. I got to see the fucking, just the, the street poles and stuff again, the street lamps and everything and all those wires. And like, this is just cool to see. It's nice.
The closing shots really hit, like the star reflection on the ocean. In the theater, you really get like, oh, there's a whole lot of them. Versus, like, on your home screen or anything.
Yeah, I felt like there was so much more detail inside of this compared to... Even with the final Evangelion movie, I feel like there's so much more nuance and, like, detail inside of, like, this film and the way that you watch it in theaters. Because, like, with the final one, it's much more, like, polished and, like, clean and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this, it feels so surreal to me that people made this movie with their hands.
Oh, yeah.
It is insane to me.
Or when you see the cells without the lines.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was like, oh, wow, that's... I haven't seen anyone use it like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was just showing, like, the middle step to animating this whole scene. And then it has texture. If I remember, it's like you see like the uneven lines between where the lines would cover.
Mm-hmm.
You see like the splotchiness of it all.
Yeah, and even with a lot of the line work that they had inside of it, I was like really trying to focus in on those details just to like let it wash over me even more. And you could see the inconsistency of like the lines at times. And that is so beautiful to me. Like it looked so lifelike. And it had that little bit of added life to it. And, man, those live action scenes really hit home for me. Like, especially when it first goes to it, and then it's just that, the camera's just, like, panning over and, like, tilting down from, like, one of the telephone wires or the light rail or the, those wires. And it just felt so beautiful to me to see all that. And especially after that chaotic journey where there is no hope. There's no hope, and nobody is coming to save you.
Yeah.
And then just seeing the little cat just on the ledge and seeing the sunrise and like people just living their lives. And there's that one line where it's like, where do you think like dreams come from or something like that? Mm-hmm. And then it's just the countless faces of everyday citizens walking by. Mm-hmm. That to me is one of the most beautiful moments in cinema that I've ever experienced. Mm. And I look forward to that every time that I watch this movie. Like that part of the movie is what reinvigorates me. Yeah. To like keep going in whatever way. And it's just a reaffirmation of life. And I feel like every time that I watch this movie, it's when I am meant to see it.
Right.
Because the effects of it eventually get jaded and like dulled and like worn over with time.
Right. Or you get desensitized.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You get desensitized. And I'm really glad that I got to see this movie with you guys, especially since we watched the final one together. Like, like when it came out, it feels so odd to me that I am able to watch this even in theaters, compared to just on a computer screen or a TV screen or whatever.
Yeah. I never thought that would happen.
Yeah.
I never thought I would see it in theaters. You said something a second ago that like struck a chord with me. I don't remember what it was.
Like,
but
did it have to do with like when you watch a movie?
Well, so for you, okay. So you like you're talking about that scene where you're seeing all like the people walking by or whatever, and that like was like a reaffirmation for you. For me, that moment comes when the ending is happening and Yui, Shinji's mom, is talking about how like, hey, you know, everything will be all right as long as the fucking sun, moon, and earth are here. Like, it'll all work out, and it's all peaceful, and it's, like, Shinji calming down from, like, his fucking, like, just fury or whatever. That moment always hits. And then the line of, the line of, like, well, paradise can be found anywhere as long as you have the will to live, or as long as you have the will to live, heaven can be found anywhere, however it's usually interpreted. I like that line. No matter, I guess every time I watch that, I'm like, this line and those moments with Yui always hit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how, I don't know why, they just do. That's always like a reaffirming thing for me. And yeah, that always speaks to me. And I'm like, but then I also think about like the Freudian stuff, like, oh, he only could like get fixed up by his mom. Like, what the fuck? Like, what?
No.
I don't know.
she doesn't fix him because that's like their final goodbye, yeah. I think. Where she's like, okay, bye. Or, like, you know, they've had a chance because I think he's, like, 3 or 4 when she passes.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, he kind of gets a part of Gendo's wish to, like, see Yui. And she's just... And then he's... But he doesn't see her until after he's made the decision, you know, to allow people to return to themselves if they choose.
Right, right.
And he's, like, floating up, and then she's floating away. And then he's like, okay, I'm ready. It felt like it's not like her making it better, it's like him realizing,
right? I mean, she's pushing him along, kind of,
yeah,
but he's like reconstructing his own ego, he's reconstructing himself again,
yeah.
And I like how, as he's growing, trying to grow up and piece himself back together, like all the crazy shit's happening outside is like falling apart. Like, he's essentially like saving himself finally, right? Like, he's like clawing himself out of all the weird fucking Cthulian looking motherfuckers.
Yes.
You know, all these,
he's
like
in the red ocean.
Yeah, yeah. Oh man. I also really like it when Rey is like everywhere. Everyone sees Rey and they're like, their heads are popping and shit.
Oh,
turning
into
fluid. I'm like, how like eldritch horror is this? Mm-hmm. Like, it's so cool.
I love, because we haven't done a series breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
But I love when you go back to episode 1, mm-hmm. and the first time you see your Rey in the streets for like a split second. It's like, oh, that's Rey's original soul before Lilith is like put onto the artificial being. It's like Rey's there the whole time. Every time you see like Rey floating, it's not clearly one of the clones. It's like Ray's absent soul just wandering around watching.
Oh, weird.
The build up to the final stuff.
Right? Oh, shit, and he sees that again at the end of.
Right? Yeah, that's where I argue, or that's my interpretation of like Ray is still
okay.
Like she's been kicked out of the whole. You can return to human form or not.
Because
she's like a weird clone that falls into this nebulous space.
Crazy. Oh man. Yeah. Oh man, I really miss just watching this series now too.
Yeah, me too.
It's a good summertime. Well, it reminds me of summer because it's so fucking hot in those episodes.
Is it because of the global catastrophe?
Yeah, that
it's summer all the year.
Yeah, and like you always hear the cicadas, you always see the heat waves, and those images I love so much. I'm gonna try to like infect that so much into my work as much as I can. I tried doing that with our last film, I Play Loser. I tried putting in like. The cicadas and like just the heat of the morning hot sun when one of the characters wakes up from something. So anyway, I like that shit. I'm like, I'm gonna try to steal all this shit as much as I can. Like, fuck yeah.
that's my whole editing style. Yeah. Just rip that shit off.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I've definitely used imagery, especially from like live action stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, I've definitely included that. Yeah. As well as just like arcs.
Yeah, true. I know, I was watching, I was like, oh yeah, I remember when like we filmed Mannequin, and, like, we were all into Ava at the time, and I feel like that had influence on Mannequin with, like, the light rail stuff and everything. Like, there's no way it couldn't have.
Yeah, especially the part where Frank, his head falls off, and then he becomes a mannequin himself.
Yeah.
And then he finally, like, loses his, like, soul in a way, and then he has to just, yeah. Yeah, that's entirely fucking influenced by it.
Shit. That's weird. That's weird that, like, art will always influence other art. And that's why I always say that, like, there's no such thing as original idea. Like, you know, even fucking the fucking Mona Lisa, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, fucking...
Da Vinci didn't just make that up.
Head portraits were existing before him. He just like
since the Egyptian times.
Yeah,
like, the pyramids are being built.
He just did it his own way, and everyone liked that shit. But yeah, which also makes me think of how when you look at art, there's always gonna be two kinds of people, right? Like whatever, it's a spectrum, obviously. But I like to boil it down to two as a joke, where people will either be going to the movies for entertainment. Or people will go to the movies to want to think and feel and think of their trauma. Or another way I like to think about it now is people will look at the Mona Lisa and be like, oh, this is great. I love it. Or people will look at the Mona Lisa and be like, yeah, this is cool. I want bigger tits, though, on her or something. Yeah. Or whatever, you know. That's kind of my joke. And that makes me think of, like, the guy who brought his girlfriend to this movie. And it's like, she didn't get it.
Like, she didn't get it.
Mona Lisa? She probably got it more than you. That's what I would want to say.
Like, Mona Lisa, I don't know about this, man. So, yeah, I don't know. I like watching End of Evangelion, and it was really cool seeing it again. I'm trying to think of, like... Whoa! There's cops right next to me on the freeway.
Yeah, right now we're in Patrick's car. We just finished watching the movie. But...
Yeah. Is there any helicopter noises, or... You hear that cop on this megaphone.
Yeah, they're after us because we look suspicious talking about End of Eva. But I'm trying to think of any other closing thoughts, anything we want to add or we want to talk about that we haven't already talked about. Or if you want to just keep on talking about it, go for it. I'm trying to think of stuff.
But, sure.
Go for it.
What was I talked about the Oscar scenes. This scene with the theater.
Mm-hmm.
That hit fresh. Oh my god, I'm drawing a blank now. The pressure's on.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, like we've said this, we've talked about this so much already. Yeah,
we've seen this movie together like so many.
It was a decent crowd. Mm-hmm. It was a small theater.
Yeah. I wonder how many people showed up on the first day, because this is playing only for 2 days.
Yeah, and it's Wednesday night in the middle of the week.
And then the other one was playing on like a Sunday or Saturday or something. I wonder if more people showed up then. I didn't see any cosplayers. Sure, some people did somewhere in the world.
I loved hearing people's reactions to the hospital scene.
Yeah, forgot about that.
Oh, and then the Masato kiss scene.
Yeah, when Masato's kissing it.
Oh man,
stand up. I want to stand up in the theater. You don't get it. This is essential. If you feel any illicit emotions from this scene, something's wrong with you. You should want to cry.
No, I'm really glad I got to see this. I feel like I've talked this movie to death. Like, just in, yeah. Like, so much.
I know.
But at the same time, like, I love everything about it. Mm-hmm. I got the complete series with this movie on it recently on Blu-ray.
Oh, shit. Did you the original dubbing? Or no, the newest, the latest dub?
I think that there's an option to put on the original dub.
Oh, shit.
That's
crazy.
But I feel the same way. I think I might want to delve back into this for, like, a summertime viewing on the series itself.
It's so fitting.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's so much to even to dissect in each of those episodes.
Oh, yeah, so much.
Like, we've only barely scratched the surface of it. I mean, there's even, like, the other two rebuilds that build up and, like, add on to this ending or extend beyond it. And
flesh out relationships and the world.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Red Ocean. And the rebuild trilogy.
And with Rey as a whole. She actually has way more personality. But man.
I want to say I will continue to rip off Anno. I'm never going to stop. And also say, you know, he's probably one of my favorite artists. Just because of what he was able to accomplish, as well as how much the whole genre resonates with me so much, like just the sci-fi high concept spiritual Freudian Jungian stuff. I live for that. And yeah, and then like Jezza referenced, like I've also watched Ideon, Spaceship Runaway Ideon, which was a direct inspiration for Evangelion, I want to say.
Oh, was it really?
Along with Devilman.
Devilman.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Devilman.
So he was doing it too.
Yeah.
And he made Eva. So
don't even get started on Devilman. Oh, and then I remembered the other anime with all the magical schoolgirls.
Oh, Madoka?
Yeah, Madoka. Oh, my God. Madoka Magica. I love that. That show and Evangelion are like, if I could go back to college and write like a fucking senior thesis on the deconstruction of like using little kids to be your heroes, like I would use those two shows as my fucking prime sources of examples. Like,
oh, yeah.
Holy shit. Yeah, like Madoka being the deconstruction of magical schoolgirl archetype, and then Evangelion being the deconstruction of fucking using your kids in the military. Like, oh my God, it's such a wealth of like fucking, it's a rabbit hole you could go down for eternity. Holy shit.
Yes. Have you seen Rebellion?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. Yes.
Oh yeah, I think we talked about that.
Yes.
And my wallet now is my end of Evangelion ticket touching my Madoka Rebellion ticket from back in like 2014, 15.
I wanna watch that in theaters. Fuck.
You didn't see it in the tower?
Wait, what?
The year it came out, was at the tower?
Oh, no. I watched it, like, off the internet after, like recently, like, not too long ago. Yeah.
It was in theaters.
Oh, man. That must have been sick.
I was there. It was sick.
No, I definitely agree. I think that Anno is a philosopher whose life work is to help boost some sort of communication between one person to another, as well as to like a community. And it's his work is just a guiding light in my life. And I love to think back on all the lessons that I learned from this series as a whole, and even from his other works too.
I was gonna say Shin Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares about Don't Look Up? Look at Anno grab a mass marketed IP in Godzilla that he's a huge fan of, and he twists it into a commentary about how the Japanese government mishandled Fukushima and environmental catastrophes. Like, you give anyone else that movie and they're going to make some schlock. You know, Godzilla teams up with Godzilla. It'll be the king of all monsters.
Yeah.
That's what they'll make. Whereas he makes a, you know, here's how they mishandled this nuclear power plant that killed an unnecessary amount of people because of incompetence and or corruption.
Yeah, man.
He's the greatest. Shin Kamen Rider? I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, I need to watch it. I didn't watch it. I don't. Or, well, it was that or the other thing, but one of those came out in theaters. Like,
he did Shin Ultraman,
too. Yeah, one of those.
Yeah, I wanted to see that one, too, but I didn't get to.
Yeah. But yeah, man, he's always great. It's always got good stuff.
It's just like, how does he do it? He's already done it with Ava and the rebuilds, then he's still doing it.
I don't know. I have no idea how he does it. I think that he just latches on to that ultimate arc that he's following in some weird way. Because it feels like everybody's like building up to the same thing, but it's the way that we approach it in a weird way. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's what makes his work like so clearly defined. And it's like what all great artists like do. They just make the same shit over and over again.
But Paul Schrader like.
Yeah, but in different ways though. And because it's like when they go to remake the same thing, they're at a different stage in their life. So yeah. Of course it looks different.
Right.
And of course it isn't the same thing, but it's just so, it's leaving your mark on the world or on storytelling as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just passing down lessons that you've learned, you know, raising questions, but also providing some glimpse of an answer or something like that to propel whoever is engaging with it forward in their own life. And I feel like that is such a daunting thing to have to do, especially with the level of responsibility that goes into it, whether people are aware of it or not. They're actively communicating with these viewers on a very baseline level where there's no walls that are being put up or whatever. I mean, there could be if it's like a certain type of genre or whatever, but it's like getting people to like lower their perspectives or to open their perspective, I should say. And to me, that is both so precious and so, it's scary at the same time. I feel like that's what prevents me from, like, wanting to, like, even make my own stuff. But it's, like, at the same time, it's, like, no, you just gotta make what you want to see or make what you feel like you need to make. And I feel like that's what Anno does. And I respect the hell out of that. I respect the hell out of anybody who's willing to take an idea from wherever they come from and to bring it to form. Is just, I'm clapping right now.
Well, that was well said, and I think with that we'll go ahead and conclude this episode. Thanks for tuning in once again for the latest and greatest episode of Lay Film, talking about End of Evangelion once again. Brought to you by by I don't know, what's a product placement we could do really quick?
The Orange Tang.
Orange Tang.
Yeah, Orange Tang. The LCL.
LCL fluid. My favorite. So yeah, once again, thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you in the next one, and sayonara Evangelion. Now it's time.